Aging's not easy. It's preferable to its alternative, but still challenging for older Americans in ways they might not have expected. And those challenges are compounded by the sheer numbers of people who are growing old, the legacy of the baby boom. Cassandra Kantov, an advisor for AARP, has studied the issues surrounding aging with dignity for years. She's coming to town to share the conclusions of new research studies at the upcoming Pacific Rim International Conference on Disability and Diversity, and she joins us by phone. Hi, Cassandra. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's more than clear that this is a subject of interest to a great many. And, you know, what I said a second ago about how people, when they come of age, become elderly, are faced with problems they might not have anticipated. Have you found that to be true?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, even for myself, when I started working in the field of aging, I was in my early 30s, mm-hmm. And now, you know, 20 years later, I'm looking and I'm seeing how all of these issues are so relevant, even in my life.
Because things can sneak up on you even when you think you're prepared, am I right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it could be anything from just, you know, you're in your 20s or 30s and you buy a house and you're thinking, okay, well, now I'm 60 and maybe I have arthritis and I can't really walk up the stairs and I don't have a bathroom on my main level.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things that could definitely impact our ability to age in a more positive way.
And, you know, that's a good example, Cassandra, because, you know, for one thing, when you buy a house, you think, okay, I'm set for my future. I have, you know, I am sufficiently prepared to age gracefully, but that's something that can sneak up on you, isn't it?
Absolutely, you know, and then you couple that with, you know, if you have older parents and maybe you have to become a caregiver,
mm-hmm.
To your parents, and perhaps you have to move them into your home, and you know, caregiving, of course, comes with a multitude of other issues and challenges. Is my home really in a condition where an older parent can function, can move around, can be is safe?
Well, that's another thing that's happening, Cassandra, is that not only are baby boomers you know, coming of age, hitting the age of 70, but a lot of them, their parents are still alive.
Absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, in Hawaii right now, there are 154,000 family caregivers, and the family caregivers they're providing, our research shows that around about 144 million hours of unpaid care, and if we put a dollar amount to that, that'd be around $2.1 billion. And, you know, as a caregiver, sometimes you are not only navigating caregiving, but a lot of caregivers are still working or they still have young kids. And so they're balancing all of this at the same time.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, you know, when you even look at caregivers, caregiving is such a challenge, right?
Sure.
Both positive, you know, a positive challenge. Yet, we find that caregivers are really highly stressed because they're balancing all of these things, and sometimes they have their own health issues. They're not always able to take care of, you know.
Well, you,
sorry, go ahead.
When you become a caregiver, Cassandra, you're frequently into an area well beyond your area of training and expertise.
Absolutely. And we find that our caregivers, it's interesting because a lot of our studies, we ask caregivers, you know, where you would like for your loved one to be taken care of. And the majority say that they want to stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
And but with caregivers staying at home, a lot of times the care recipient staying at home, a lot of times the caregiver is doing some, you know, small tasks, like driving their loved one to the doctor or helping them with meals, but sometimes they're doing really complex tasks, taking care of nursing duties or administrating medication, and oftentimes they're not being trained. We also have asked, you know, if they're being trained when they leave the hospital, when their loved one is discharged,
mm-hmm.
and we find that oftentimes that's not happening.
Well, that would be an awful lot of training to absorb in a fairly short time when you've got a lot of other things on your mind, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. You know, like I mentioned, caregivers are often, I think we found about 50% are still in the workforce, and they are making they're making sacrifices at work, whether they're going in later, taking off, and sometimes caregivers are moving from full-time to part-time.
Cassandra, all the issues that you're describing are, how shall I put it, the situations you describe, you know, people who are themselves in their 60s being caregivers, people dividing between a job and a caregiving obligation. All these things are happening in greater numbers than ever before, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, just in Hawaii, you have 154,000 family
yeah.
caregivers, and as the populations that continues to age, those numbers are just going to be magnified. And, you know, furthermore, Hawaii has some of the highest long-term care costs. And so even wealthy people will find it very difficult to be able to take care of long-term costs.
Whenever the numbers increase to this degree, you have to wonder if there isn't a, if they don't reach critical mass at some point, even cause a kind of a collapse of the system. I mean, how does one forestall this as these numbers increase?
Well, you know, at AARP, we've really worked tirelessly to provide as much support as we can to family caregivers, including trying to work on legislation. Some states are working on workplace protection so that people are able to take time off of work and not be penalized for caregiving. Some states are passing legislation where there's a tax credit for caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are always looking for different ways that we can support and empower caregivers, family caregivers.
Challenge being moving legislation in fast enough to stay ahead of the problem, yeah?
You know, that's always difficult.
It is always difficult, and that's kind of the concern. You referred to some new research studies that have come in that sort of inform this issue. What kind of things have we been learning recently?
Well, around caregiving, of course, you know, like I mentioned, family caregivers, they really want their loved ones to stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we ask caregivers themselves how they prefer their care, they too want to stay at home. They just want to have the supports to help them, you know, and those supports can be anything from respite care, which provides the family caregiver with a short or a long break so that they can go and they can take care of themselves, you know, and do tasks like go to the doctor or exercise, supports like visiting nurses. And so we find that, you know, we just continue to push and support those efforts.
Well, keep on pushing, Cassandra. What can I say? Thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you. And can I just say one more thing? Also, AARP Hawaii is constantly hosting information sessions and resources and workshops around caregiving.
Be good to take advantage of them. Thanks very much, Cassandra. Cassandra Kantav is a senior research advisor at AARP, focusing on supporting AARP state offices with their research and advocacy initiatives. She'll speak on Aging with Dignity at the Pacific Rim International Conference on Disability and Diversity, runs from October 9th to 11th at the Modern Honolulu and Hilton Hawaiian Village. Coming up, untangling the details of the Affordable Care Act and the efforts to replace it, and taking your calls.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Tory Richard Limited, celebrating more than 60 years of design for the island lifestyle. Tori Richard is proud to support local community news, public affairs, and talk programming on HPR.
The congressional effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act has stalled more than once, but it continues today, even though time is running out and key Republican senators have spoken in opposition. The focus of the repeal effort seems to be a shift in responsibility to the states. We want to hear how you feel about the ACA and its possible repeal, so we're asking you to call us at 941-3689 with your thoughts. On Neighbor Islands, the toll-free number is 1-877-941-3689. And in our discussion, we're going to have some expert help in the person of Hilton Rathill, CEO of the Healthcare Association of Hawaii, who's with us in our studio. Hilton, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Good morning.
What's your feeling of the degree of public understanding of what is going on here in this ongoing discussion?
Well, it's probably hard because many aspects are changing on a daily basis. Healthcare is a very complex topic, and even for those of us who work in the industry, we have to keep up, and we're getting bulletins on a weekly or even daily basis. There are a couple of bulletins that came out just this morning, for example, with updates.
Yeah. And what were those latest information to come in? It had to do with changing, was it Alaska and Maine?
Yes, there are. Well, the Graham Cassidy bill is, I presume, Chris, that that's the bill you're talking about, which is a current bill out there. And there is a large push by the Republican administration and the Senate to get this bill through. Mm-hmm. And so Senator McCain came out at the end of last week and said that he was opposed to the bill.
Right.
And two of the Senator Collins from Maine and Senator Murkowski from Alaska have also, at least they help scuttle the last bill. And they have, at least as of a few minutes ago, they had not publicly said that they would do. But there is initiatives on the way by the Republicans to sort of sweeten the pot for those states and trying to get them to come on board so that they can get this bill passed under reconciliation.
The thing that I think a lot of people have difficulty understanding is as soon as we've heard about everything that we've heard about the ACA repeal has centered on numbers of people who would lose coverage, loss of things like the pre-existing condition provision. What is so wrong with the ACA? What motivates all this effort?
Well, that's a really good question. And part of it is actually partisanship and ideology. Mm-hmm. Because President Obama and the Democrats were able to get the Affordable Care Act in without Republican support, there is concern on the part of many Republicans by that. Another part of the concern that a lot of Republicans have is the individual mandate. They believe in the freedom of expression, the freedom to choose or not to choose health care. Mm-hmm. And so that individual mandate and the employee mandate that was in the, or the employer mandate that was in the Affordable Care Act, are part of those partisan objections to what was originally passed with President Obama and the Affordable Care Act.
If you, as a gesture of independence or for whatever reason, choose not to have health care and end up in the emergency room, suddenly you have the, extreme need for some medical attention. What does that do to the system overall? What does that do in terms of costs?
Well, there is a federal law called EMTALA, and what the federal law states is that if you present yourself at an emergency room with a health condition,
right,
essentially regardless of how severe that condition is, the hospital is obligated to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is, though, that emergency rooms are set up primarily to treat emergencies. So you have a lot of equipment, you have a lot of staff, you have a lot of specialized expertise. So it's not an inexpensive place to get health care.
Right.
The least expensive visit here in Hawaii at an emergency room would probably cost at least $600 or $700, the least expensive. And
that could be for a cut finger.
Even if you had a cut finger or just had a headache, for example, and you walked into an emergency room, and it's the way the system is built right now because there's a lot of overhead associated with that. So if you don't have insurance and you've got a cut finger or you've got a really bad headache or you ate something that doesn't agree with you and you go to an emergency room, they will treat you because under the federal law they're required to, but at a very expensive rate. Whereas if you had gone to an urgent care center or your primary care physician, instead of spending many hundreds of dollars, maybe you'll spend a couple hundred dollars. And so that cost in the emergency room, those many hundreds of dollars, $600, $700, $800, whatever, for fairly simple ailments, gets absorbed by the system. And the hospitals, and in Hawaii, all of our hospitals are not-for-profit, they have to turn back to other sources of insurance or other payers to make up those costs.
And you take that one ER visit and multiply it by tens of thousands on a statewide level.
And the numbers add up very, very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the whole, you know, we've been chasing solutions for a very long time. And the perception in Hawaii, correct me if I'm wrong, was that Hawaii was ahead of the nation in providing health care to its citizens. And we had fewer uninsured than just about anyone else. Is that true?
That is absolutely correct. Hawaii is incredibly fortunate. Not only do we have, you know, it's a beautiful place to live, we also have prepaid health care. We also have a very strong Medicaid, or in Hawaii it's called Quest Plan. And so between prepaid health care and Medicaid, we have a very high proportion of our residents who have health care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this happened even before the Affordable Care Act came in. So when the Affordable Care Act came in, it had an impact on Hawaii. It did close the gap even more. But the gap of uninsured we have in Hawaii was much, much smaller than it was in many other parts of the country. In Hawaii, for example, when prepaid came in 2010, we had somewhere between 9 or 10% uninsured. That number has now dropped down to somewhere between 4 or 5%. So that's quite remarkable. There's only one other state in the nation, which is Massachusetts, who has a better statistic in regard to health care insurance for its citizens.
Hilton, let me just interject for a second because we do want listeners to call in. We have the phone lines open because I'm sure there are a great many people out here affected in one way or another by the ACA and the efforts to repeal it. So we really want to hear from you. Let me give a phone number for Oahu, 941-3689, and a toll-free number you can call from anywhere else, 1-877-941-3689. And let's get some callers in on this discussion because, Hilton, coming back to you, the whole idea, the push of the current effort to repeal ACA is toward the states, you take care of it, right?
That is correct.
How is that being set up?
Well, this would be if the Graham-Cassidy bill, which is a current bill, the current version that the Republicans are working on, and they've gone through, this is the fourth version. If this particular bill were to go into effect, this would be the largest intergovernmental transfer of funds from the federal government to the state government in the history of this nation. So basically what this does, the Graham-Cassidy bill, is it shifts a huge amount of responsibility from the federal government to the state. Now, some people would say, well, that's maybe a good thing. And that may be true, and there could be, it does allow flexibility, and that's one of the things the Republicans are pushing for. But it also has the potential, the Graham-Cassidy bill takes quite a bit of money, literally billions of dollars, even at a state level, takes billions of dollars out of the healthcare economy because of the way the formulas are calculated, and especially between 2020 and 2026. Also, there were certain provisions that were put into the Affordable Care Act. For example, people are protected with pre-existing conditions. Under the Affordable Care Act, regardless of how sick you are or how sick you have been, provider or insurers are not allowed to discriminate against you or charge you a higher premium. Under the Graham-Cassidy bill, those protections don't definitively go away, but they could go away because it gives the states latitude as how they deal with people with pre-existing conditions. So it's very possible that people in Hawaii who have an illness or a sickness, or the family members who have that, could be charged a materially higher premium under the Graham Cassidy bill.
What that means is that you are pretty much at the mercy of how your state government is run under that, under what you describe.
That is correct, yes.
So now we have, once again, we have a political aspect to this whole discussion that, you know, varies from state to state.
Yes, it does. And again, the autonomy, one of the advantages of the autonomy is that states are different, and the Affordable Care Act didn't really recognize what Hawaii had in terms of prepaid. But as I mentioned previously, it did close some of the gap. However, we don't know where the states would go and where Hawaii would go under if Graham Cassidy bill were to go into effect. Now, we're very, very fortunate that there are our congressional delegation is very supportive of what we have in Hawaii. They do understand prepaid health care. They do understand what we have with our Medicaid program, a very strong Medicaid program. Mm-hmm. So they are all adamantly opposed to the current legislation.
Let me bring in a caller from Maui. Scott? Oh, we just lost you. Scott, we're going to ask you to call back. There's another caller from Kauai. Satya is on the line. Satya, what's on your mind?
First of all, I'm so glad you're discussing this issue. It's a major issue. And well, one of the reasons is not only the health care bill, but the cutbacks in Medicaid are going to destroy a lot of people's lives. And secondly, the defunding of Planned Parenthood has been lumped into this bill. And then the health care bill itself is going to throw a lot of people out of insurance. And I think the solution is for the people. Every citizen should get on the phone and call various senators and urge them to defeat this bill. And I have the telephone numbers of several people. One of them is Collins.
The senators who are seen as the swing votes. Satya, we'll have people look those up on their own. But I want to bring Hilton in on this discussion because, again and again, we hear about these negative impacts. We seem to have an awful lot of movement toward a change in the bill. And yet most of what we hear about it is the harm it's going to do.
Well, that is correct. And let me give you some specifics, Chris. The American Hospital Association just this weekend came out with some numbers, and they did a state-by-state analysis of the impact of the Graham Cassidy bill. And according to their numbers, 74,000 Hawaii residents would lose Medicaid coverage by 2026 under this bill. An additional 17,000 would lose access to coverage under the marketplace. So the number of uninsured people would go up materially from what it is right now. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about previously, if people have insurance, they tend to use it. In other words, if they get a cut, if they, again, have that migraine or if they got an upset stomach,
right.
If they have insurance, they will just go and see their doctor. They will call up their doctor. Maybe they'll use telehealth, one of the telehealth programs that's out there right now. Mm-hmm. They maybe go to an urgent care center because they know they've got insurance. And so every time people lose insurance, that creates an additional burden on the community in which people live.
That gets back into that whole issue of emergency room visits. And I think we have Scott from Maui back on the phone. Scott from Maui called to talk about the income that the hospitals make on emergency room visits. And he further says, can Hawaii pass a law that ensures the rates that are insured under Obamacare? Are we able to keep patient rights and keep Medicaid? And that's an issue that has been, talking about the whole states' rights issue. Given that this repeal does swing towards states' rights, could Hawaii find ways to protect itself from these negative impacts we're talking about?
Well, yes, I believe we can. We will mitigate whatever these results are. For example, we at the Association, Healthcare Association of Hawaii, we work very closely with the Department of Human Services. We work very closely with the IGA administration. We work very closely with key senators. And there is a lot of support to maintain the advantages that we have here in Hawaii. Now, the reality is, though, that if under this proposal, we, if it were to go into effect, we would lose material amounts of money, many, many millions of dollars, and it would be actually billions of dollars by 2026. And that means that that's money that's not available to the state, whether it's for subsidies for people to buy insurance on the commercial exchanges, or whether it's money that the Department of Human Services would not have. So therefore, and if they have less money, and right now, as I said, we have about 350,000 people in Hawaii who are covered under Medicaid. If we have less money, then we either have to dial back the benefits, or we have to dial back the number of people who are insured, or you dial back the amount that doctors and hospitals would get for those. So there's different ways to deal with it, but none of those ways of dealing with it are good for us as a state because it takes money out of the healthcare system. And we don't have our healthcare system. People think it's very strong. They think it's very robust because, in general, they can get to see a doctor, they get to see a hospital. But we are under reimbursed at a federal level here in Hawaii. So we do not have the margins in healthcare in Hawaii are very, very slim compared to most other states.
So we're actually more vulnerable.
We are more vulnerable than many other states. That is correct.
And, you know, that's, that seems so odd given the perception that most of us have spent the last 20, 30 years with, which is that we're better off than most states due to what has been done earlier in Hawaii, the employer mandate.
We are better off certainly because of prepaid and because of our Quest plan and because of the support of our legislators and governors over the years. But the healthcare delivery system that actually provide care is much more fragile than what than it is in many other states. And part of that is because of the inadequacy or the fact that we don't get proportionally the same type of federal funding that many other states get.
Well, let me just interrupt once again, Hilton, just to ask people to call in because I know that there's a good deal of personal involvement in these issues. 941-3689. Let us hear from you if you're on Oahu. 941-3689. On the neighbor islands, you can call us from 1-877-941-3689 and tell us how you personally are affected because what do you, coming back to you, Hilton, what do you think is going to happen with this repeal effort? It seems as if it's failing at this hour.
Well, Senator John McCain came out on Friday and said that he's opposing the bill and he called for bipartisanship, which is what the Democrats are calling for as well and many of the public are calling for as well. Senator Paul Ryan came out just yesterday and said that he is not supportive of the bill. So right now, this bill is very, very tenuous. Senator Collins and Murkowski have both said that they are leaning against signing this bill despite the sweeteners that have gone into the bill for those states. So, but even if this bill were to go through, this is just a Senate. Now,
that's right, yeah.
we have reconciliation, which expires this Saturday on the 30th. And so if this bill does go through, and it then goes half to the House. However, there's not enough time for the House to debate this. And so the only choice they have is either to go with this bill in its entirety as it's written or turn it down. So there's not enough time for any more discussion for the bill. We don't even know when the bill's going to come to the floor yet. So the time is very, very short. The American public in general, the majority of the American public right now, according to a latest CBS News poll that just came out, are opposed to this bill. So we will, right now it is not looking good for this bill to pass. And there was a statement that just came out this morning, for example, that was signed by the American Hospital Association, the American Health Insurance Plans, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Hawaii, the American Medical Association, a joint statement where all of these organizations, both hospitals, physicians, payers, have come out against this bill.
Let me bring in a caller. Michelle from Kaneohe, are you on the line with us?
I am. Hello.
Hi Michelle. How is this, what's the impact on your life?
Well, right now I'm 66 years old. And I am probably going to work for as long as I possibly can because I do have a very good health care plan through my employer. However, I keep hearing nightmare story after nightmare story of people who retire And suddenly their whole Social Security check is eaten up with mostly paying for health insurance. And it's confusing to navigate. And again, I have not had the misfortune to have to start navigating that stuff, but this is scary for me.
I think it's scary for a lot of people, Michelle. Hilton, it shouldn't be your whole Social Security check.
It should not be, but under Medicare is certainly true that Medicare Part A and Part B, Part A is the hospital side, Part B is the physician side, and Part D, if you have it, is the which most people have, is the drug side. But there are significant co-pays that occur under Medicare, and there are benefit limits, and I think that's probably what this caller is talking about, is the amount of out-of-pocket expenses that can occur when you're on Medicare, which can be materially higher than on many of the insured plans that we have here in Hawaii under prepaid. Prepaid is actually quite generous in terms of its benefits, and under prepaid there are limits as to how much the individual employee pays out of pocket, and that's a very small number compared to most other states. So it's another reason again where Hawaii, the individual employee in Hawaii, is shielded from the cost of health care.
We have one more caller. Arlene is a nurse on Volcano. Arlene, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, tell me what's your perspective, Arlene?
Well, I'm a geriatric nurse, and I've worked in several nursing homes in Hawaii. And although people often start out as a private pay patient, they go to Medicare when their funds are depleted. And I would say the majority are on Medicaid. And what will we do with these disabled elderly that cannot afford home care, nor do they have homes? If this bill passes through, what could we do? How could we have a solution to this?
You are, that's a very important point. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, there are material cuts, very drastic cuts under this bill that would impact Hawaii, and we would have to make some very, very tough decisions as a state because we would have less money. The question is then, well, how do we deal with that? What do we do? Do we, right now, the prior caller was talking about challenges that are people having on Medicare. One of the reasons people on Medicare have trouble getting access, for example, because many doctors will not take Medicare because of the reimbursement.
Yeah.
Now, Medicaid reimbursement is already less than Medicare. So if the Department of Human Services were to get even less money, one of the choices is to cut that reimbursement even further. But if you cut it even further, you run the risk of further shrinking the pool of providers who will take care of people with Medicaid. So the caller is right. These are very, very troubling issues, and that would have a significant impact on our ability to take care of the poor and the disadvantaged here in Hawaii.
Hilton, we're almost out of time, but I just want to ask you briefly, if you can, what would you do? You know, if you were suddenly given omniscient power to solve these huge problems, what kind of things would you do?
Well, prepaid is incredibly important to the state of Hawaii, and anything we can do to protect prepaid, and I know that it does put a significant burden on the employer because of the restrictions on how much the employee can contribute, but I think protecting prepaid has demonstrated over the decades that that has been good for the state of Hawaii, and I believe that most employers recognize that. I also believe that Medicaid programs, protecting the poor, protecting the disadvantaged, are very, very important. So whatever we can do in Hawaii to preserve what we have. Now, are there opportunities to streamline the system? Are there opportunities to increase care coordination, to reduce some of the friction in the system, reduce some of the costs? Yes, and I think that's where we should be focusing our time, is how do we take the pool of dollars that we have, which is material even for Hawaii,
sure,
and how do we better spend that? How do we spend that in the most efficient manner? And how do we also get people to focus on their health, to focus on their health and well-being so they don't get sick, and they don't become a burden on society. And that's something that all of us can do.
Yeah, take care of ourselves. Thank you so much, Hilton. I think we've all gained a great deal from having you here. And I want to thank the listeners for calling in, because it's a valuable discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Hilton Rayfield is the CEO of the Healthcare Association of Hawaii.
Curiouser and curiouser. That's the HPR listener who's always seeking context, a variety of perspectives, and an opportunity to learn. It's your desire to know yourself and the world that HPR strives to serve with all we do. Starting this week on HPR One, it's the return of Left, Right, and Center, and a new show dedicated to investigative reporting. It's called Reveal, and for the full reveal of this refreshed slate of programs, go to our website or mobile app.
Should farmers have the right to sell their crops on their own land? The owners of LBD Coffee, which grows coffee and tobacco on its land in Kapa'a, Kauai, think so. LBD's efforts to open a retail shop on its property have led it to file a lawsuit that pits the state against the county, who has the final say in how land gets used. It's a case that could set a wide-ranging precedent, and Civil Beat Stuart Yurton has the story in today's Reality Check. Hi, Stuart. Thanks for talking with us.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
This story starts off simply enough, right? We grow coffee and tobacco, and we'd like to sell it on the property. How did it get down this rabbit hole?
Well, essentially, yes, that's right. It starts pretty simply. The coffee and tobacco grower wants to sell its products. More importantly, the legislature passed a bill in 2012 saying ag land can be used for exactly this.
Yeah.
Farmers can do this, or property owners can do this on ag land.
So far, so good, right?
Yeah, so far, so good. The twist is that when the property owner, the farmer, went to the county of Kauai and said, we'd like a zoning permit to do this, mm-hmm. the county of Kauai said, not so fast. We want you to get a more sort of complicated use permit because we think that's what you need. There's nothing in our ordinance that lets you do that. So really, this is going to be a big fight between whether the state law controls, which basically says, hey, you can do retail on ag land, or whether, in this case, this county law controls, which says, no, you really can't.
A big fight that could set a precedent, a big fight that could inform big fights yet to come, right?
Yes, that's right. So this could be one of those classic legal land use fights in Hawaii that we see. And again, this one is going to be touching on really interpretation of the statute. The Constitution might come into play, the state constitution. It really just remains to be seen. I've got a lot of the citations to the statutes and other documents in the story. If people want to drill down and look at that, I'm not going to try to go into it in detail here because it gets a little complicated. But the basic idea is which controls, state law or the county ordinance.
Well, it gets a lot complicated, Stuart, and it's also, you know, we just got over a state v. county discussion of the transit accommodations tax. It doesn't improve the climate of county and state interaction, does it?
Well, maybe and maybe not. One of the things to consider about this is the state law says to the counties, you may modify the general rule that we're allowing this kind of thing on ag land, mm-hmm. but you need to do it by ordinance. So, and not only that, but the law specifies a lot of things and really gives the county a lot of power here. The issue here is that Kauai County has not come up with a specific ordinance in response to the state law.
Yeah. It would seem from that the ball was in their court, but they're sort of kicking it back to the state, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, the ball was in their court, and they're saying, well, we just don't want to do anything with this. We're going to rely on our comprehensive zoning ordinance, which does not specifically allow this use on ag land, and that's enough.
Well, it clearly hasn't been enough to solve this particular problem, so we're going to want to follow this case as it goes forward. Thanks
that's
very
right,
much,
Chris.
Stuart.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Every day we bring you a reality check from Civil Beat, today featuring reporter Stuart Yurton.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Honolulu Waldorf School, dedicated to integrating the intellectual, practical, and artistic development of students. High school open house 6 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 25th. HonoluluWaldorf.org.
Stargazer Time, our weekly look at what's happening in the massive universe around our tiny planet, as well as what we can look for in our dark island skies. And as usual, we're turning to the expertise of Christopher Phillips and welcoming him back. Hey, Christopher, welcome back. What do you have for us this week?
Hey, Dave. It's good to be back. So this week, stargazers, look out for the planet Saturn in our night sky. It can be seen in the south after sunset, and it will set in the west around 10:45 p.m. The moon this week will become brighter as the week goes on, so make the most of these dark skies while you can.
And you have an unusual report this week, something that apparently has been in the background, low priority on the radar, but ongoing nonetheless, and that's something like an asteroid retrieval project?
It is. Now, this year has been quite eventful as far as deep space missions go, but one daring mission to an asteroid has been keeping a low profile in the news. It is the OSIRIS-REx mission. This ambitious and somewhat crazy mission is to orbit an asteroid and then land on it.
Now, this sounds like it could be dangerous for a spacecraft. Has there been anything like this done before?
In fact, there has. The Japanese Space Agency flew a probe called Hayabusa to a distant asteroid, and they successfully retrieved the sample from the surface and returned it to Earth.
And was there any damage?
Indeed, there was. Hayabusa did not come away unscathed. During the initial landing, the probe collided with the asteroid and contact was lost. Sometime later, Hayabusa managed to realign its antenna with Earth and contact was restored. It then went on to bring the samples home.
So with OSIRIS, I guess we can expect they learned from that experience.
Well, one would hope. There are so many variables during close approach maneuvers that it's more than likely that OSIRIS may get a bump or two. But so long as it doesn't sustain any major damage, the mission should still be a go.
That sounds very interesting, and I know that you will keep us abreast of any developments on this very exciting project. It's Christopher Phillips, another fun report. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. We'll catch you next week for Stargazer.
Support for Stargazer comes from Urgent Care Hawaii. Walk-in clinics in Pearl City, Kailua, Kapolei, and Waikiki, featuring ZipPass, a new online tool to secure a place in line. AmazingUrgentCare.com.
Next time on Offshore.
I think we all like to feel that we're associated with something that's breaking new ground. And I think that America really does have this attitude of doing things no one else does or can do.
Why do astronomers feel a giant new telescope on top of Mauna Kea is so important? What will Hawaii and the scientific community stand to lose if the telescope isn't built? Tune in to Offshore, Thursdays at 7 p.m. on HPR.
Wood has the beauty, complexity, and infinite variety that you can only find in nature's creations. Artists can only hope to match what nature offers. But woodworkers take what nature has given them to make something beautiful, knowing that every piece and every piece of wood is unique. That's how Mark Sferi has built his life. He's a juror for and an exhibitor in Hawaii's Wood Show, an annual event at the Honolulu Museum of Art's Line Kona Gallery. And Mark is with us in our studio. Mark, what led to your choice of materials to work with?
I guess back when I went to art school, Rhode Island School of Design, my parents allowed me to go there if I'd major in architecture, which I started out doing, but I was totally disenchanted with that and wanted to work with a medium that I could use my hands. And I went around to all the different studios in the school, and when I walked into the wood shop, there was just something that really resonated. It was the material, the smell, the equipment.
Yeah. When your disenchantment of architecture, did that have something to do with your detachment from the finished product? That's a sort of a hands-off
exercise. Yes, right, touching the material. And before that, I was very much interested in art, doing paintings and drawings, and it was much more about the tactile quality of, you know, touching your material. And architecture was more in your head than than actual making.
So. Exactly. It's sort of that's how it kind of shakes out who chooses their their métier, what it is that really, really drives you. But for you, and I think for a lot of woodworkers, it has to do with the sense of touch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Is the fact that wood is an organic material, you know, do you get a sort of a quasi-mystical sense of it having life in it?
I guess conceptually, yes. But, you know, the practical side is I'm working with the material directly, and I'm just used to the nature gave us, learning about grain direction and how the correct way to cut it and how it reacts with the humidity and so on. But mostly, I mean, many woodworkers, wood turners in particular, work with what's called roadkill, which means when a tree gets knocked down, they go and they chop it up and they make something out of it. And my background as a furniture maker is much more about boards, going to the lumber yard and seeing the nice stacks of material. Mm-hmm. So I guess in a way I'm a little bit removed from that because that's what I'm looking at. I'd be hard pressed to identify certain species of wood because I'm used to, I know what they look like in terms of the wood itself, but not what the leaves look like in the bark.
But at the same time, different types of wood have different personalities, different uses, and have to be treated in different ways.
Absolutely. I mean, certain woods are blander, and they can have more, what I would say, personal expression, where you're making an artistic statement, whereas other woods with what I would call loud grain or beautiful curly or, you know, figured wood, sometimes simpler is better. So, you know, woods are selected based on application, what it's going to use them for.
I would think that with a spectacularly beautiful piece of wood in and of itself, you could be in danger of gilding the lily.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, again, sometimes the simpler statement makes so much more sense than carving it or doing other things to it.
So when you get a piece of wood that's a candidate for you to make a piece of sculpture, do you kind of live with it and try to get a sense of what it wants or, you know, what's best to do with it?
No. I'd have to say
good answer.
No. My background is more about coming up with ideas and then finding the material that I can, you know, use to accomplish that.
Uh-huh.
But I certainly understand it from the other point, which is, okay, here's this piece, what can I do with it? The one example I would use is I went to a lumberyard once and the piles are nice and neatly stacked. Nice straight boards, except on one pile there was a really curved piece, and I just made a beeline for it. It was so unusual, I just went to grab it, and the person who owned the lumberyard said, "Do you want that piece? You can have it." And I thought, "Wow, what a great thing! This is the piece that I wanted." And I actually took the more what I would call organic approach to designing a piece around that. You know, making a bench that had a curve to it, and all of the other parts of it were sort of embellishing or addressing that shape of it. But for the most part, I would say no. But, you know,
you could go either way.
You could go either way, right. Some people, that's everything is a reaction to the material, and other people, you know. I think generally I could say this, that furniture makers are thinking more about the construction and, you know, there's certain requirements of functional pieces that are less apparent or obvious if you're doing a decorative piece, a piece of sculpture or a wood turning or sculptural wood turning.
With a functional piece, you want to start with a pretty strong concept and find the wood to.
Right. You need to think about structure. How's it going to hold up? And, you know, that's an equal part to design. Sometimes it's a really big part of it, and you're keeping the top simple because it's so beautifully grained, or you're book matching the top or something like that.
It amazes me to see the kind of shapes you can get out of wood, which is pretty resistant to being bent, for example, but even, although it can be, right?
Absolutely. There's certain woods that are that bend easier than others. On the mainland, it would be ash or hickory. Those would be easier to bend. But there's also the way the wood is cut. Wood that is quarter sawn, not to get too technical here, but it's the wood bends much easier with mm-hmm. quarter sawn wood. A great example would be a baseball bat, and I make baseball bats that are on the humorous side. But when you hit a bat, there's always the logo on the face grain
right.
because the quarter sawn edge is the one that will take the bending. And if you hit it on that logo, it will oftentimes break. So that's sort of the basis of any kind of bending for furniture or whatever. So
that's, we were always taught that in Little League.
Right, right. I never knew why. I just thought we're supposed to look at that.
That's right. You get the label so that it's facing you.
Right.
If your bat's going to crack. Well, there's so much to learn about wood. I wish we had more time, but thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Have a good look at that upcoming show.
Yes.
Mark Sferry is a woodworker and juror for the 2017 Hawaii's Wood Show, which runs until October 8th at the Honolulu Museum of Art School Line Kona Gallery. And that's it for today's edition of The Conversation. Up tomorrow, a mortician-turned-comedian takes an inside look at worldwide burial customs and the American way of death. We like to hear from you. You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments. Here's the number, 808-792-8217. You also can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Post comments on Facebook at The Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation. If you missed any of this show or want a past one, find them on the Conversation page with links to more information about guests and topics. Just look under Talk Shows for The Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org. I'm Chris Vandergoot. Join us tomorrow.